Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology here on WMR.FM. It's the 26th of June, 2025, the last weekend of June. So really, it's the end of the second quarter, beginning of the third quarter. 2025 is halfway over. Some people will thank goodness for that, and some people will say, oh my goodness, I don't know what 2026 is going to look like. Well, it's been a difficult week. It's been a hard week. The week opened on the news of the passing of SEO legend and actually one of the originals, Jill Whalen. Jill was a friend in the very, very early days of the industry to me, and yeah, she was a friend and mentor, and as I said, a founder. She was doing SEO and founded the High Rankings newsletter back in 1995.
Wow.
It's arguable whether her or Bruce Clay were the first people to actually be doing, you know, the transformative work on people's web pages and advising people what to do on their web pages. Web pages were like pretty damn new in 1995.
Yeah, they were.
So that's when Jill started. And this is really interesting things about her. I mean, I'm sure anyone who's listening to the broadcast, sort of the podcast, I should say, has read articles in Search Engine Roundtable, Search Engine Land, Search Engine Journal, or just had innumerable personal blogs about people's relationships with Jill. But I got a couple quick things on her. Number one, the reason so many people are absolutely dedicated to white hat ethical SEO is Jill and her gang. They were the first people to, basically, they were the very first do it right crowd who would, you know, stake their reputations and their careers on completely ethical by the books SEO. Jill's very simple argument being this is what they're saying to do and it works, so why not do it? The other thing about Jill is the sharing culture in SEO, the growing knowledge through sharing. It's easily argued that she set the original template for that with her High Rankings forum and the crew that she formed around that. She had a crew of 7 or 8 highly influential early content creators and early website builders. People like Deborah Musteller, Christine Churchill, Matt Bailey. And those people went and popularized Jill's ideas. So beyond Jill's writings in the High Ranking forums and Jill's speaking at conferences, so those people went and they also popularized her ideas. And they would share. They just, you know, just sit and talk with them. They would share anything with you. And that was the culture that formed in the earliest days of SEO and continues to this day. And, you know, I think a lot of that had to do with who Jill was. You know, just a, sort of like a hippie New England housewife who discovered something kind of amazing and magical in the way you deal with language and websites. And with the help of, you know, hundreds of people who became her very best mentees, formed an industry that's, you know, that's responsible for the jobs we have today. So Jill Whalen, she died over the weekend after a short bout of cancer. She was only 63 years old and
way too young.
Yeah, way too young. She will be missed. She made our careers, literally. We also lost another person who was really dear to a lot of people in the industry, especially people who were leading the PPC industry in the earlier days. Wills Murphy, the partner of David Satella, I think she was chief financial officer of Clicks Marketing, one of the early large PPC houses. She also passed away over the weekend in her home in Florida. Wills was an amazing, kind, beautiful creature. Completely loved by everyone who met Wills loved Wills.
I met Wills in New York with David Satella in one of my first conferences. And we were talking about photography because we both love photography. And for those who don't know, she did things like raise butterflies.
Yeah.
Make sure there were more butterflies and she would post about them regularly. Apparently she'd been sick for a while, went back to her post because I hadn't seen anything about her being sick. Yeah. I was really gutted when I saw that that happened because I talked to her so many times over the years and always look forward to her post about butterflies and nature and animals. And she's just a lovely soul. And Dave is a lovely man. And I'm sure right now I've talked to him, but not in depth. I didn't want to press him, but I'm sure he just lost his heart.
Yeah.
Like Wills was his heart. And so anybody who knows him in the industry, try to give him your support right now too, I think.
Yeah. And the important note, like about both Jill and Wills, these are the people you always sort of thought you'd have a chance to say something to again, but suddenly you don't.
Yeah.
So anyone who's like that in your life, like keep in mind, we're here to enjoy each other and to love, love our experiences with each other and to love each other and all that sort of stuff. So, probably do that a lot more often than the petty and silly stuff we do instead.
I agree. Yeah. I always thought I'd have another chance to see a Wills butterfly, birth.
Yeah.
So I feel badly. I hadn't reached out to her, probably a month or so.
If there's people out there that you care about, you just haven't said hi in so too long, it might be a good time to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we got a time. It's the weird thing about mourning and death. And I was so upset about when I heard about Jill and about Wills. And then, things come and attention moves on. The world moves on. And, we got to jump into stories from the abyss. Only one of them, luckily, this week. And this one isn't such a bad one.
It's a good one, I think.
Well, it could be. See, we're not going to tease the story. You really don't tease Big Balls that much because he's gone. Big Balls has left the building. The character known as Big Balls, who was, Elon Musk's right-hand man, so to speak, at Doge, has resigned. He was really known as Edward Korenstein. He was 19 years old, and he quit about a month after Elon Musk left Doge. Again, he went by the name Big Balls.
Yes.
He was, I think he was most well known as the guy who stripped the Social Security Administration of all of its data. Anyway.
Yeah, so it has a shady history that involves hacking groups and Russia and all sorts of fun stuff. But he's no longer collecting a GS-16 salary, so that's good for the taxpayers.
Okay, one of the more significant features in the Doge breakup of American governance has resigned. His name was Big Balls. And this was a serious news story about a guy named Big Balls.
It was. Although his real name is, of course, Korenstein.
Korenstein.
Korenstein, yeah. Just Korenstein. In case people need to know the real name in the future.
19 years old. Yeah. Okay. So the Google of the future, and probably the Microsoft Dogpile, U.com, and DuckDuckGo of the future is going to be... Pretty beholden to AI. Now, this might be weird in the case of an advertising of a machine like Google that was built on Google AdWords, on the immense fortune that was made by Google AdWords. But Chief of Search Liz Reed is You know, it's confirming. That's something everybody else in the corporation has confirmed. It's AI everything from now on. And they're going to be adding ads to AI mode. What that looks like, we don't know. But they're not going to put ads. They're not going to put ads on everything yet.
Yet.
Yet. I was, you know, the weird thing is I was doing a lot of studies on results in AI mode this week. And the references, the link references that you get in AI mode look a lot like paid ads, even though they're not. It's not very confusing, but it's very confusing.
Well, they say that when in AI mode, agentic AI is going to open up all sorts of different ways to think about monetization. And I guess we'll see. The longer queries are giving them more information to target you with, basically.
Well, I mean, here's when people were talking about how craptastic Google was a couple of years ago, and people were ending up doing three or four searches when one search might have gotten the goods before. That was ultimately, you know, people thought that had to be good for Google because it created more real estate. Same phenomena happens when people converse with search and expand their search every time. You get a little bit here, a little bit, a little bit, a little bit more. Every time Google's creating more real estate to put stuff on, should they have stuff to put there. So yeah, I can absolutely see this. Even though there may be fewer clicks on the ads, there'll be a far greater number of impressions, and the clicks on the far greater number of impressions might make up for the fewer, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, kind of.
The click-through rates will be low, but there'll be a heck of a lot more of the clicks given the number of impressions that are going to be coming out.
Yeah, the problem I see with that, though, is like if my traffic drops 30% because of AI overviews, which we know does happen in some verticals, I have to make a lot of clicks out of that AI overviews that we do not see.
Well, yeah, you're talking as a publisher, not as the platform.
Oh, yeah,
Google's the platform, and it just wants to make itself money. And if you survive to give it more information, good for you. But Google wants to make itself more money.
Yes, that's very true. And we know that Sundar's classified, the best measure of that is queries. Queries is what Google needs to make revenue.
Yep. So, the more queries, the more real estate. It's really, really a simple equation. And again, making a chat format. Every time I expand my search just a little bit, because that's the way the chat's gone, I got more stuff to look at, more space to look at, more space for Google to, you know, hopefully catch my click. Now, again, I might not click as often. Now here's what really weirds me out. What happens when I've been noticing that with YouTube, if you don't have the premium version, they're waiting till the most exciting part of the video. You're just about to hit the climax, what you've been watching for, and the ad runs.
Of course.
So what do you think is going to happen when AI Overviews composes an answer that really leads you to need to click on a paid ad to really get what you need? How long will it take them to figure out that that's a good revenue source?
We'll see. I mean, I don't know how long. I don't use it anyways because, like, you know, I always say I don't know I don't have time to figure out what it's saying that's right and wrong. But I could see that being a detriment, though, because if I had to start watching an ad every time to get to my answer.
No, not watching an ad. But if you had to, you know, click on an extra link to get the information, but that link happened to be behind a paid ad.
Yeah, I don't think I'd do that after a while.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Google would do that or not. I mean, that would be crossing six or seven Rubicons they promised they would never cross. So
they've never done that before.
But you know what? As Liz Reed said, agentic AI does open up a whole bunch of different opportunities. Many of which we haven't even thought of yet. They're there, just no one's figured out what they are yet.
The hard thing to reconcile with Google is that things they say like agentic AI will blah blah blah. If you read the real stories about agentic AI, it's kind of not doing so great.
Christine, again, that's today. Everything is going to change as it evolves, and it evolves really quickly and has gotten it just in the 3 years since ChatGPT was first introduced, 2.5-3 years. The evolution has been staggering.
But their latest version is the most erroneous that they've put out. Like, so, you know, I'm just saying, they're just saying that to say that these
how to say this. These are, in certain applications, it's making mistakes. In other applications, in other uses, it makes far fewer mistakes. The applications are so widely varied that how to say this? AI isn't a product. We can't look at it as one singular thing, and that's one of the problems with it. It's quickly become something we can't look at directly because it's all around us. We have to look at it as a 360 degree sort of thing, and that's really hard to wrap our heads around. Yeah, sometimes it fails, but more often than not, it doesn't. Humans are like that too. Sometimes they fail, they get the answer way wrong, and sometimes they don't. Let's hope that we retain the ability to, you know, think, critically think, and to do our own logic breakdowns before simply relying on the pattern recognition that says this is what always comes after that. That I know it's further down on the grid, but it might be a good time to jump to that MIT study. That is actually quite worrisome. People are letting generative AI and ChatGPT and all that sort of stuff do their thinking for them, and it's having the same effect that that GPS units have had on people's like senses of spatial recognition. They're kind of forgetting how to map things out in their head. And using AI so much, people are literally forgetting how to think things through in their heads.
Yeah, and this was a study done by, this study was small, but it was done with MRIs. So they were able to determine that in the brain space, in the MRI, that they lost cognitive function doing these answers to these tests. So I'm trying to find the details of this study. So they did these three different tests, and the test showed, like, one was just straight, you just use the answer bot to answer, and one was mixed, and one was only doing it yourself. And they found that the people only used the answer bot to answer actually couldn't talk about the topic. And then they did an MRI study, and it showed that their brains also did not light up in those areas where they would expect. So, which makes sense. I was in Amsterdam, and the people at my hotel was there for a conference. I was doing a talk on ChatGPT, it's like 2 years ago. And they were there for an Alzheimer's conference, neuroscientists. And I asked them about the technology, and they said, you know, what happens if you use it a lot? And they're like, well, your cognitive functions won't be as good because you're offloading the cognitive function. So people will say to this, when I posted this, they'll say, but calculators. Well, because you use the brain, like when you were in high school, I don't know about in Canada, we could take philosophy instead of math because that was the same credit, because those activate similar areas of the brain. Plus you still add stuff. You just may not do a complex problem without a calculator in your head. It's also not all of your cognitive function. But the problem is what they're seeing is the offload of the cognitive function means you're not doing the research, you're not doing the logic, you're not doing the tying it all together, you're not writing it, you're not looking for your best words, you're not all those things to communicate, right? So you're letting it do it all for you. And just like anything over time, you lose that capacity. It's just like I coded HTML for 14 years, but anytime I took like a break for like 3 months from doing that, oh my gosh, I go back and go, how do I not know? I've done this 14 years. How in the world do I not know the HTML for this, right? But that's because I wasn't using that part of my brain anymore. And with people in the GPS studies, I had dementia. The dementia got more severe, older people who used brain maps all their lives when they use GPS. So they took them out for orienteering classes. Like you go out and you find your way, like Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts, and it would improve their cognitive function. So people do need to be really careful about offloading so much cognitive function to a tool. If you're doing it once in a while, no big deal. But if you're doing it all the time, you can definitely start to have some actual cognitive issues.
If you take the time to learn a subject while you're writing about it. And this is one thing I've always loved about SEO was one of the primary means of communicating with our clients is the written word. I have no idea how many reports I've written in my career, but it's got to be high dozens, probably over 100, probably hundreds, right? And each of these is a small novel. Maybe a novella, 5 pages to a novel, 70 or 80 pages. And you had to learn everything as you wrote. You already knew it, but you're reinforcing what you already know. You're relearning the stats and the metrics that you're writing about and rethinking about all those relationships, how this relates to this relates to this, and this is why this outcome happened. And Christine was earlier talking about how, people who were using ChatGPT to write essays in this MIT study, their brain didn't light up when researchers thought it should light up. It was probably when they were reading salient parts from these essays back to them. And, if you're the one who gathered the knowledge and then put it on paper and somebody's reading it back to you in a way that shows they understood the work that you put in, your brain lights up because you feel good about it.
Yeah, that's true, too.
And that's what they were talking about. That's why brains didn't write, because they didn't actually do the research. They didn't know that 2 equals X. They didn't get that because they didn't figure that out themselves.
Yeah, and that's a big part of the issue with offloading your cognitive function, because you're not offloading like a task. You're offloading all of it. Mm-hmm. So you're not doing that deep dive, making the ties, connections, figuring out your logic. How will you support this argument? Well, the challenge to that argument be, as you would when you write something like that. So your brain's just sitting there waiting for something to write for you, and then then you're done.
Yeah, that is my biggest, my harshest worry about a future driven by AI is loss of individual function, ceding those responsibilities from ourselves to the machine. And not having the ability to do it again, or more importantly, to double check the machine's work. Because the machine can do so much so fast. It could increase your productivity 100-fold. But if it's all gibberish, if it's incorrect, most importantly, if something coming off your desk isn't as accurate as you can possibly make it, because you're selling that to somebody, eh? Like you're giving that to somebody for money. It has to be really good. And if it isn't, if it's predicated on bogus information, because you didn't double check as a responsible human adult in the room, then you're using the technology badly.
But here's the other side of it. If you're trying to ask it something or write something for you, how do you know that you know what's wrong? Because you don't.
Because I know the subject matter already, and I've gone out of my way to research it. I don't know how other people do it.
That's what I'm saying. People are just relying on just having it do it for them, right? It's like, how do you know what's wrong? Because you don't. I mean, when people use it for a search, it's not a search engine, but they use it that way. And I'm like, but how do you know what it gave you was correct or not? Because you don't know the topic because you're searching for it.
Well, again, it depends what you're doing and how you're doing it. The very vast majority of the time, it's going to give you correct information if you're looking for something simple. What was the Blue Jays score last night? That's real simple. And it will give you the right answer. But then again, so will a rich result. Extracted from the Boston Globe.
And we're talking here about writing articles. So I'm just saying that if you're using it that way, you may have no idea. As we know from the many things we've reported on, where people used it to write something, even lawyers, and they didn't know what was in there was incorrect.
Well, again, this is why you cannot present something written by the machine without double or triple checking the work. But yo, folks, if it's leaving your desk, for God's sake, you have to edit it. It has to be good, or it has no right to leave your desk. You got no right to file that off on a paying customer if it ain't good.
Or you're a teacher if you're in school.
Sure. Yeah. Now, the reverse side to all of that is we live in a world where people are pushed to produce more and more and more and more and work harder and harder and harder and harder. And honest to goodness, we only got so much energy as like working beings, right? And so, I can see why. I can see people cheating. And I can see the more people rely on these tools, the more quote unquote productive they appear, the more productive they're going to, the more demands we've made on their productivity in the future. So yeah, use these tools wisely. But yes, these tools are going to be in everything, everywhere, for just the simple reason that they exist.
And by the way, we kind of made a detour, and there's still some important stuff we can talk about.
Oh, there certainly is. I just thought it was a good time to introduce that thing from the study, because I really want the concept of lost capacity to sort of be a, how to say this? That's something that I think we should be thinking about a lot as we move quickly into this future.
Yes, because a lot of it might not show up until you're quite older as well.
Oh, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? That's the way it always is.
Exactly. Yeah. So if, and also the other thing too is if people are using it and they're younger and their minds are forming, they might not form the connections in the brain that allow them to do deep critical thinking and thought. So, because you're taught that in school, right? A lot of that's from being taught. So if you're using this to sideswipe, you know, having to write something and do the research on something, which a lot of students are probably very tempted to do, what happens with you don't have the ability, because you did this for 5 years in high school, or 4 years in high school, sorry, not five. What happens to your cognitive ability as you grow?
You still have enough cognitive ability to understand that you need to reach out to a millennial, or better yet, a Gen X, to do it for you. Yes, we're going to be employed till we die. And it's not even because we don't got pensions. It's just because they'll need us.
That's for true.
Well, and also because we don't got pensions. But anyway, so this is good for old people. And anything that's good for old people these days is a good damn thing, if you ask me.
I agree.
Okay. So Cloudflare's CEO, Matthew Prince, has noted again that search traffic referrals continue to plummet. He suggests publishers are facing an existential threat. People simply aren't clicking on links, chatbot links, and they're, relying on AI summaries without clicking on the links to the website that keeps Matthew Prince's business in business. Now, Matthew Prince has more reason than his business to worry about a zero click future for publishers. Information has to come from somewhere. Somebody has to be compelled to write this stuff. And the only thing that really compels me to do anything is the promise of a whole big bag full of money. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be so crass about it, but it's true. I hate writing. I'm really good at it, but I hate it.
Every writer hates writing.
I hate it. You give me a really whole big bag of money, and I'm happy to do it, even if I hate doing it.
Yes.
But if you take away that big bag of money incentive part, I'm just going to do the writing I love, which is poetry, and you probably don't want to read that, because other people's poetry sucks, including my own, I'm sure.
Well, I know somebody that went to a Google event overseas, and they asked them directly, why should I continue to publish? They didn't have an answer.
For the good of humanity.
Yeah. But I mean, he's just like, you're killing all my traffic, so why should I continue to publish? Because people need to be aware. The AI overview part of the AI mode, it's different depending on what intent is. So if it's like e-commerce intent, you are likely to get a click because they can only purchase it for now at your site. If your information, when you rely on people visiting your site, like publishers and things of that nature, like news publishers, then you're not getting those clicks in a lot of cases. Now, it's still very strong. I don't want people to think like, oh, I just cut off my SEO work now. No, definitely not. Also, that's what gets you into the citation in the first place. But the fact is that it depends on your industry, but there's certain industries that are being, just hammered really hard. And Google keeps telling us that, oh, that's not a thing. It's just better traffic. Well, if you take away 30% of my traffic, it doesn't matter if 5% that's left, out of that 30, whatever it was,
When it comes to traffic, it all depends on your revenue model. I have some clients that are absolutely, I didn't think it was going to happen, but I'm pleasantly surprised. I got two major e-com clients that are absolutely thriving in this environment. I got one significantly major publisher who is experiencing the great decoupling in the most profound ways. the great decoupling being like, you know, your impressions are going through the ceiling, but your clicks are flatlining or worse, going through the floor. But the impressions, oh my freaking God, they're getting a lot of attention. It's just that the attention is being satiated by the by an AI overview. They don't actually get the click anymore.
Right, and because they only show, we've talked about before, they only show the AI overview on e-commerce about 4 to 5% of the time. So it's very unlikely that someone hits one, and if they do, they're probably researching to buy a product, which means they still got to go to you to get it. So I know why the e-commerce sites are doing really well. The informational sites, though, they don't have a reason someone has to come to their site once the AI overview is summarized at all. And that's why they're having such problems. They show up in the click, and also Google doesn't make the click obvious.
So here's what I'm advising the publisher client. You got a whole bunch of great content in several different formats. If we get your website, you know, if your website is super fast, super technically beautiful, gorgeous website, metrics of gold. We get that, if we get that worked, metrics of green, we get that worked out, wonderful. Now let's start offering your content in ways that Google really wants to really wants to understand it. Let's make sure the schema is worked out. Let's make sure that everything that can possibly be labeled is labeled. And if you're not getting the 10 blue links click, which 10 blue links still exist, they're just way down there somewhere. If you're not getting that 10 blue links click, let's at least brand the information that they're seeing in the overviews somehow. Or let's make sure that a rich snippet, a video, an audio clip, an image even appears somewhere that's clickable. To steal a concept, I'm sure that Morty has already branded himself. I'm calling it branding the search or branding the search. But that's the best advice I got. You got other forms of media? Freaking use them.
Yeah, it's old Azure. You can take one piece of content and make it 9 different things for 9 different platforms, right? Make video, make a post on LinkedIn, which comes up in the Hidden Gems algorithm, you know, make the video watch page so it shows up in the video section. Make sure you have images that are being surfaced. Like, there's so many different places you can surface. They're still all organic. It's just, when it comes to the AI overview, it's just really difficult. And you definitely need a tool that's measuring the AI overviews that you're encountering, so you know if the traffic loss is because of that or something else.
Okay, now, and that's where things get weird and funky, because to measure AI overviews, you actually got to be really measuring server logs, and that's expensive. That's insane expensive.
And you can also get Bing Webmaster Tools and see if the traffic changes are the same there, or, you know, even though it's a much less traffic.
Well, you can see that. So you can definitely see the difference in the traffic and traffic patterns.
Yes.
But it still doesn't tell you which.
No.
Are the AI overviews. And most importantly, it doesn't tell you what's appearing in AI overviews. No. To do that, you got to go searching yourself still. Ryan Jones from Razorfish has innovated a tool called Serpicon that will show you AI overviews of you and your competitors under, I think, 25 keywords, unique keywords. He'll expand that when he's got more money, really. When he's got more server space. But like, that's a tool that's in its infancy, and I can see where it's going to go. It doesn't quite give you that competitive analysis of what the other folks are doing, but it will show you the AI overview that was pulled up around keywords for you. What that's worth. Again, this tool is in its infancy. Ryan's going to make a bunch of changes to it. Serpicon, it's of all the things that are tracing, and it's only working in Google right now. He hasn't expanded it to Bing or anything, or ChatGPT. But like, the only tool I see that's got an affordable price point that's tracking AI overviews is Serpicon. Have you seen anything else?
Yeah, Microsoft. I mean, not Microsoft. I would say Microsoft. SEO Clarity, Mark Traffigan's company. He works for them.
Indeed, but SEO Clarity is a platform for larger websites. Yeah, like enterprise level sites.
Yeah, it's not inexpensive. I don't think there's anything at the small level yet.
Oh, But yeah, SEO clarity will give you a extraordinary view of who is on your website and what they're doing there. But you're going to pay for that.
So Google is
going to keep marking ukuleles.
Yeah, Google is trying to supposedly offer some sort of help to publishers, like news publishers.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
come on.
I know.
This one's all yours. I'm just gonna snipe from the side on this one, okay?
Please do. It's called OfferWall. It lets publishers give their sites a variety of ways to access content. So, like, instead of having a subscription, you'll do micropayments. Micropayments have never taken off. I know. They never take off. No, I don't know why they never take off, but they
because
don't.
Nobody wants to. I just want to read the damn article.
Exactly. Take surveys, watch ads, can add their own options to OfferWall, like signing newsletters.
Let me do this survey, please, before I can read this. I'm not even interested in the damn survey.
Gosh. We do it on our grid here, right? Between 35 and 45 articles a week. I can't imagine if I had to do 35 to 45 functions to get to the articles. Like, I just wouldn't read them.
OfferWall is complete and utter BS.
They said they've tested it for a year, though, Jim.
on what? Trade seals?
Yeah.
Like, and then they have, if you put an object, a task, or some impediment between the user and the information they want, they'll find other information.
Google does say Ad Manager customers saw 5 to 15% lift when using OfferWall, but I don't think in the long run this is going to make up for the lost traffic. They also have something called Super Tab, which allows you to pay a small amount to access the content for a period of time, like 24 hours or a few days, a week. So
instead of getting a $5 monthly subscription, I have to do a $1 daily subscription. And I'm not even willing to do $5 for 30 days. Come on, Google.
Something like that. So they're saying that the case studies show 9% revenue lift and but this is off AdSense and Ad Manager, so who knows when it gets to just regular search.
And by the way, a 5% revenue lift off of the zero you guys have left a lot of the publishers with. Well, yeah, I can see there being a revenue lift, given they were seeing little to nothing.
Yeah, or even if you decline 30%, you get 5% increase. Well, I guess it helps a little, but it's not really going to do a whole lot for you. So we'll see what happens in the long run. But right now, I do not predict this is going to be that successful.
No. And I really like the idea that Google says, okay, we've taken this away. We got to give you something. I appreciate that they appreciate that, but this is bogus. It's insulting.
Yeah, just like they keep telling people that there's nothing going on with the decline in clicks. No, everything's great. People are like, no, my traffic is not there. And they,
it really depends on the revenue model you have for those clicks. If it's advertising, traditional advertising, eyeballs on your page, you are so super screwed. That model's over.
Well, it doesn't need to be over, but you need other traffic.
Oh, that model's dead. That model's so, like, how are you going to get people to your page if Google's not going to give you that traffic anymore? It's not about fairness. It's just about the way it is. No, that model is dead.
Diversify. I have clients. It's not dead. They're making a lot of money. But, I mean, even one who's got a 70% decrease because of a core update has 70 million clicks a month. So, not a month. Sorry, over 3 months. But still, it is a difficult one. You need to diversify your traffic sources. It can't just be Google anymore.
Well, okay. I will grant that. And one other tip. Check out what is producing the rich snippets and what's being cited in AI overviews for Google searches. A lot of stuff is coming from Instagram when it comes to images associated with the product.
Using social media platforms, especially Reddit, Quora, Facebook is everywhere now. LinkedIn are ways to get yourself in the hidden gem algorithms so that you can show on the page without having to worry about regular organic.
Of all of those things, my stomach is a little soft on Quora and Reddit. I mean, I know Google's featuring them and giving them lots of love right now, and it absolutely totally is. I just don't know what it's going to be like into the future. Investing all that energy, just think of where you're putting the energy.
Yeah, you just got to diversify. The Google AI Mode is expanding to India in Search Labs. Just, that's their next place. And Google is saying that they're The reason they do so well with the AI mode and the AI overviews with the content is because they have their freshness index. If anybody doesn't know, the freshness index is fresh. new things, not ever good.
I will give them this, that the information pool that they have to draw from is almost certainly fresher than what ChatGPT or Copilot by extension or others are drawing from. That probably does make it that much more accurate, although there's a whole bunch of other stuff that has to go into verifying what is and isn't. But like, yeah, I would say they're probably right about this. Overall, technically speaking, yeah, probably right.
Okay. Yeah. We've been talking about this for a while. I think we need to start moving on. We've got a lot of stories and not a lot of time.
This is going to be a, I think the correct British government term is a cluster daddy.
Cluster daddy, yes.
Not to be confused with the American president. The UK, Britain's competition regulator, is suggesting it might force Google to rank businesses more fairly in organic search results, which means it's going to compel Google to change results to meet what it thinks is fair or offer alternatives to the results that it's showing.
Yeah, but it's just devalue. I think, unless I missed it, I think they're just talking about doing that in a way that Google's not preferred in its own spaces.
Okay, so no self-referential stuff. Well, fair enough. If it's only going after, Google referring its own things, own products over legit, but if it has anything to do with revealing the algorithm, I'm pretty sure it's not going to go very far, very fast.
No, it will not. But they are talking a lot about the AI presence. So they want the AI presence to be reduced and to allow competition not on Google's own properties. You know, to allow people to surface outside of Google.
This is a really tough one that is a natural outcome of the new America First policies of the Trump government. And I'm speaking as a Canadian. Often enough, we try to take, this is an international show that speaks predominantly to an American audience, but we talk about the web, the international internet. But we got to keep in mind that the international internet is predominantly an American invention, even though it's a global innovation. It was invented by the American military and given to the world by a benevolent American government. That American government isn't as benevolent as it once was, though. And how to say this? The way the world's evolved over the last 80 years, at the end of the Second World War, the United States was the last industrial power standing that hadn't been completely destroyed by war. It had people, it had resources, and it was the hero that beat back the Japanese and were the great muscle against the Germans on the Western Front at any rate. And it had this incredible advantage it took into the rest of the last 80 years that as history as we've known it, making it the colossus nation on Earth. And, you know, all of us have had to depend on America. It made the technologies that we use today. Adobe was headquartered in California, as was Apple. Microsoft was headquartered in Seattle. IBM was headquartered in Upper New York State. The point being, all these major, major tool makers that made the tools that we all use around the world today are based in America. And if they're not based in America, everything has to be interoperable with stuff based in America, based on the standards set in America. Now, that works really well when we have a benevolent American government, which has been, even with, less friendly American governments has been pretty much America's 250-year history until now. Now we have an American government that's decidedly unfriendly to the rest of the world, one that thinks that the European Union was designed to hurt America, or that thinks that Canada should not only be the 51st state, but is actually actively stealing from America. If you're a smaller country, like everybody else is compared to America, and the big country is suddenly threatening you, but you're absolutely dependent militarily, economically, technologically on the bully, you know that going forward, you can't rely on them to be benevolent. They might not be. They might one day be very malevolent. And if they control everything you have, everything you run your society off of, you're in deep trouble. And that's where everybody but Americans find themselves today.
And the stories about that the Europeans are seeking digital sovereignty as U.S. tech firms embrace Trump. This is from AOL. I honestly didn't know AOL was still there giving news. But there, people in Europe are starting to look internally inside of Europe or the, you know, UK, Europe, EU, to look for digital services that are provided by companies there, not here in the United States. Yeah. And so, like, Swiss-based Proton Mail had 11.7% year-on-year increase in March. Gmail slipped, not by a lot, but 1.9%, but still, with the amount of users they have, that's not insignificant. And so they're seeing these increases in companies in Europe getting users, but again, it's a small number compared to the amount of revenue, like, you know, for Google or something like that. But it is unintended or probably unforeseen, though should have seen it coming, consequence of the actions of our government of late.
Here's the thing. It's much easier said than done. We want to get off of U.S. dependence. But oh my goodness, when you actually look at how dependent we are on America for almost everything. But there's a massive effort underway, and Americans are going to feel this in their pocketbooks. They're going to feel this in the unemployment line. People who would otherwise be absolutely needed for work in Silicon Valley, those jobs are gone to Mumbai, or they've gone to parts of Toronto. They've gone to Antwerp. And that's belligerence in action. Okay.
So we have, unfortunately, a not great story about AI and intellectual property. Meta was in a lawsuit with Sarah Silverman and other authors. They did lose the lawsuit, but only on a very specific note of not being able to prove material harm. And so the judge even warned people, don't take this, that AI content can just train on whatever it wants, that it's still illegal in many ways. This just happens to be a specific case that was not able to prove one of the tenets of the case.
That said, the AI companies are seeing this as a major win for themselves and proceeding to hoover even more content. Yeah. And they have to. They have no choice. If they want to expand, it's like a shark. You can rule that the shark has the right or doesn't have the right to eat the fish, but it still must move forward and eat the fish if it's going to survive. If it doesn't, it withers and dies.
And then jump down the grid a little bit on that story. YouTube creators are not being told, so they should be aware that Google is training on all their video content and they cannot opt out of it. So if you have YouTube's if you have content on YouTube, Google is hoovering it.
So sort of like, if you record a podcast using, I don't know, Google Meet or something.
Yeah.
Well, you know what?
Well, we do publish on YouTube though, just the audio portion. So yeah.
Google's been trading on this show for the better part of 18 years.
Of course. No, but yeah, YouTube is being done that way. So.
Okay. Well, I'm. If it's on a Google property, it's probably open. Like, read your terms of services very careful, especially people using Gemini. read their terms of service backwards and forwards, up and down. I actually don't claim to know what's in there. I'm using Gemini, and it may well be using my stuff to train content for other people. I don't know. I know that it's using all my stuff to train itself to please me. Whether it's doing that to train a large language model for other people, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I bet you, of course, I bet you it is.
I'm sure it is if you read that very long ULA that you signed.
So
moving on to my favorite story of the day, being a Gen Xer. How did ChatGPT get absolutely wrecked at chess by 1970s Atari 2600?
ChatGPT
the major competitors, of course, Gemini, Copilot, all those in the game, but it decided to do a software emulated play against a software emulator to run a 1979 video chess game, and the matchup did not go well for ChatGPT. So this is in CNET, and so apparently the ChatGPT couldn't like recognize rooks or bishops, missed pawn forks, and repeatedly lost track of where pieces were, blaming the Atari icons as too abstract and very no better even when switching to standard chess notations. It made enough blunders to get laughed out of a third grade chess club, and ChatGPT absolutely got wrecked at the beginner level. It's just saying, basically just showing that not that ChatGPT is useless for chess, but that it's more of a language model than a, you know, a thinking super reasoning computer as it's sometimes presented. And so I just kind of love the idea that it was beat by an Atari.
If ChatGPT has read every possible combination of moves, it doesn't necessarily know the right and best combination of moves, but it has read every combination of moves. Doesn't even necessarily mean that it's going to know what piece is what.
Well, just remember, though, in 1997, IBM's Deep Blue defeated Grandmaster Gary Kasparov.
But Deep Blue was programmed specifically to beat Kasparov. Deep Blue didn't do anything else.
ChatGPT did train on chess.
Well, sure.
Just that it's not a thinking reasoning. Everything
that was ever recorded about chess, which included some pretty crap-ass moves.
It's not a supercomputer. That's why I lost. Anyway, I just thought it was a fun story because it was an Atari 2600.
Well, it is, but... I've been talking to a lot of VCs lately that I know why I'm on their list. You phone them up and they phone me up and they ask me for like my opinion on stuff at stupid o'clock in the morning, and I'm dumb enough to give it to them. And a lot of the conversation has been, what can we do with AI? We could, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you describe it to them as a statistical pattern recognition machine. It's an extraordinary pattern recognition machine.
Yeah.
It will tell you what comes next every time. Now, what comes next might be what you want, but it's what comes next. More often than not. And that's what it is. But the hype is enormous, right? But that's people thinking about what it's not. what they want it to be, but not... you know what it is, and because they got problems that they want to solve, and maybe it was built to solve them, maybe it wasn't built to solve them. Maybe the way that you prompt it can help build it to solve them, but I don't know. I'm not in those shoes. But the thing that's gotten me most about these conversations is it's been happening the last week for some reason. I don't know why I made this list. I agreed to the U.S. Search Awards. Now the VCs are calling. I wonder if there's a connection.
That's weird. Never had that happen. I've done it for years.
Don't answer your phone. That's my advice.
Yeah.
Especially at in the morning. But the point is, when they look at the technology the wrong way, they get the absolute wrong assumptions about it.
They do. They think it can do things it can't, which is what that experiment was showing people. It's not a reasoning machine. It's a predictive model. So we really need to move on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So are we on WhatsApp advertising?
No, just real quick, and I just can run through this really quick because I don't really need to talk a lot about it. Meta Labs reality division is blown through. It's blowing through money, and it may not survive if you're using it for anything you do in business. It's been losing billions a year and a cumulative total of a $60 billion loss.
These were, that's the group that was trying to build the metaverse, right? That was 3D environment we were all going to live in.
Yes.
So the Sims just, were reality.
Yeah, it's just not working. They're not able to make any money off of it. And it's burning through resources and money. So I may not stick around a long time.
My question to you, and you just warned people, anyone doing business here, be careful. This mightn't be a sustainable business environment. What business is being done there?
I don't know. It didn't get into all the details of what Reality Labs is, you know, doing. It just shared that they've lost $60 billion.
That's a lot of money. Like, seriously.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. Has made no profit since 2021.
Okay.
So, moving on to making profit, Meta is finally bringing ads to WhatsApp. They're not going to be in your actual, like, conversations. They're going to be in other tabs inside of WhatsApp. They've already allowed text-based ones. These are going to be a bit different. And they're going to try to steer users to the ads. I don't know how well it's going to go in a private messaging app, but you kind of go there not to deal with that kind of stuff. But we'll see.
I mean, I use WhatsApp to talk to people directly or to talk to groups directly.
Yeah, same thing.
That's it. Like, what else do you use it for?
Exactly. And I don't really need a bunch of ads coming my way when I'm in there. So we'll see how they implement it. They explained it, but it's not really clear until I use it how functional that will be. But they do allow click-to-message ads already, so I don't know if people will be fine with it because they already do some ads. But they're also bringing AI-powered summaries to WhatsApp for chats you missed. And people may wonder, well, you know, I have an end-to-end encryption here. I'm expecting this is private from everybody because I use ETE. So what happens? Well, they're actually using a private kind of virtual computer, it's called a confidential virtual machine or CVM. It processes the text data and then discards the information so it can't be used by anybody else. So this is from CNET as well. So it sounds like it could be good because I remember I've been in this Signal chat with people in this nonprofit I've been in, and I'd come off the show like this and there'd be 300 messages waiting. And I'm like, oh, the one place I actually could use a summary would be the 300 really? Messages being summarized. Yeah. So I can't see this as being very functional for people on WhatsApp. We'll see what's happened there. Then we get to like a funny story about Blue Sky. So do you know who joined Blue Sky this week?
No, I don't think it's a funny story at all. I think it's a disgusting story. Yeah, JD Vance joins Blue Sky.
No, what he did is disgusting.
Immediately joins Blue Sky just to rag on transgender youth and to brag about the Supreme Court ruling against him. Just to be.
I'm not talking about that being funny.
No, I know you're not.
How they reacted to him.
He comes on just to be a prick. So what do users do on Blue Sky? They ban him.
Yes. Yeah, so Blue Sky immediately suspended him because they thought he was a fake account. And then he went in and said these horrible things. And I guess he thought he could get into the conversation somehow, but he forgot it's not X. And he is the most blocked account on the app since the app opened. And it all happened in like 24 hours. That's the funny part, I thought, was that he was the most blocked ever and it happened that quickly. But yes, he was just disgustingly rude and horrible about people. Just leave people alone, you know?
What really disgusts me about this is like, you know, and it's my own negativity. I like Blue Sky because these pricks aren't there. And now they're invading just to be jerks. Just honestly, just to troll and to, you know, you're not making liberals cry. It doesn't actually work that way. You're not even making us angry. You're annoying us.
Yeah,
and we'll just, care. You know, they just adapt. But like, yeah, it's just actually, let me rephrase. You are annoying us deeply, but yeah, it's just so stupid. Absolutely.
And here's another stupid thing on X, horrible and stupid at the same time. X did not pay the moderation service that keeps child porn off of X, so they canceled their contract. They had been trying to get their money for months, and they finally just said enough's enough, and they canceled it. So right now, there are floods of child porn on X at certain hashtags. So be very careful what you click on. It could be something horrific of that nature. But the guy that was the head for the organization that was doing this said that they tried and tried and tried to get their money, and they couldn't, and they just couldn't keep doing this service without it being paid. So there you go.
That's pretty too bad. So the organization was called Thorn.
Yes.
And And yeah, they were quite successful in keeping kiddie porn off of the platform. I haven't used X in I don't know how long. It's been a very, very long time, so I don't know. I've not seen. It's just incredible. A horrible, horrible story.
Yeah, it's a just terrible thing. I am still on X, as you know, for reasons, but fortunately, I have not seen any of that. But that's horrible. I don't know if this is related to it in any way, but X has banned hashtags on ads. Which is just kind of that, because he likes to tell people that, oh, everything gets there anyways. You don't need to worry about the hashtags. I've experimented with this. This is untrue. Hashtags work still very, very well. So he has banned ads from using hashtags. It's just you know, because he thinks they're visually awful. I love hashtags. Just way to make like side comments without having to actually say them. So we'll go from there. YouTube is going to get its own version of Google AI overviews. So basically you're just going to get AI overviews on, you know, same thing on YouTube with your YouTube stuff. It's going to be shown in the video, and the search result carousels will do a big video clip up, thumbnail, things like that. And they'll show the AI generated text. I don't think it'll help much, but okay. Here's one that's important.
Yeah, the low tech one. Oh my God. So hackers or scammers are texting businesses from their Google business profile, telling them how they're leaving negative reviews for them, and then extorting stuff off them to get rid of the reviews.
And Bill Hartzer was one of the people that reported on this, and he's just explained to people, which is always the case, when you get these kind of text messages, Tim Capper as well, by the way, do not answer them, do not respond, because once you do, you confirm that your phone number is real.
Yep.
Right. And so don't respond to any of them. But if you get something like this, it is not real. Nobody is paying somebody to write all these bad reviews. And Google does have things in place to help prevent that from being an issue.
It honestly wouldn't hurt if you screenshotted and made a dossier of these if you ever have a dispute with that you need to settle with Google in the future.
Yeah.
Like Christine said, Google's got ways to process bogus bad reviews. But just in case.
Just in case, just so you have them. And moving on, Google's said there would be more core updates this year. So far, we've had one. Normally, by now, we've had two or three. We're at the end of June. And they have not. They said they're going to get better at it. I don't know what that means. Well,
I think they have. Here's the deal. The last few years, they were basically remaking their search engine. They were remaking Google to have AI overviews, to have this whole panoply of different result sets, and to make all these result sets work with each other. They've accomplished that. They figure now they're testing and watching and testing and watching and seeing what people are doing, and that actually makes sense to me that there are actually fewer updates now.
Sure, but they promised in a slide last year that they would have more. So in a Google presentation. But in December 2024, but it's been 103 days since the last one. People can't fully recover without another one running. So the people were asking Barry, because they're getting a little anxious if these have not run. I'm sure they're going to start running in the next month or two, because we're going to go into the holiday season, and then we're going to want to clean up search results for the holiday season. So Google does say it can take longer for larger issues. It can take longer and longer to reverse them in Google search. From manual actions to devaluations. I have seen with manual actions, like one group, we fixed it. It got lifted in a week, and then it's been there for 9 months and it hasn't done anything. So when they say long, they mean very long. So do yourself a favor and make sure your site is up to snuff so that you do not wind up in one of these situations waiting for Google to give you traffic back.
Yeah, well, and again, we're in a weird place now where we're looking at a zero click or lower click environment for publishers. If you've been hit with a manual action and you're looking at a zero click environment, maybe they've given your traffic back. Maybe they have it. Who knows? it's hard. It's really hard to tell. Like I kind of got that problem with one client right now. And it's really hard to tell. Okay. So Google's troubleshooting blocking content from AI mode and AI overviews. Well, that would be lovely.
Yeah, but they're just adding more specifics. But as far as I know, you still have to block Google completely.
Yeah.
So this is a troubleshooting section that they've added to the block. If you're truly blocking it, just remember, if you block it, you will lose all your Google traffic as well. You can't separate it out. Google's investigating search clicks leading to translated results. Did you see this one this week?
No, I missed this one.
So they're translated web pages like that have been appearing in the search results of like 2021, 2022. But apparently they are appearing in people's search console, and they're trying to just figure out why these are getting clicks and that are being registered. So they will tell us when they know. I don't think they have any more information right now other than they know it's happening and they're working on it.
Okay. Just so you know, URL extensions don't really matter. HTM, HTML, nothing at all.
Yeah, so
keep the file.
Yeah. The people who are kind of new to things, the reason you have sometimes a forward slash after the end of a URL and sometimes you don't, is that used to represent the lack of a forward slash was where the HTML would be, and the presence of a forward slash meant it was a folder. Google doesn't care about those anymore. They did for a brief while, but adding HTML or HTM to the end doesn't make any difference because they already assume that it's there if they read the page as an HTML page.
Okay, we just got a 3-minute warning from studio, so we got to get moving.
Yeah, Google to end self-service hotel rates July 30th, which means you can no longer self-service your hotel rates. You have to use a third party. Google gives you a third party you can use through them called travel.google. And then it's like partners, hotels, blah, blah, blah. You have to read the post from them. Google, so moving on, because that's self-explanatory. Google Maps, new search directions and user interface. Google's updating the interface in Google Search. And the car or trains icon, buses icons are in expandable menus. Okay, you have to look at it to see it. There's really not much to say about that. Google, I just signed Google Maps. Yeah, I'm really bad, though. Google is disallowing adding countries or states to service area businesses. This could be a big deal for, you know, companies that have service areas all over the country. So people are definitely going to read into this. It's a little bit long for us to cover on the show. But you're going to want to know what these new restrictions are because you won't be able to do it anymore.
Google, by the way, this is something Google's going to change upon review in the future. Guarantee it.
Yeah, I guarantee. Yeah.
But right now, what Christine said is how it is. But Google's not. This isn't going to last long. This is dumb.
And then there's an undisclosed blue search answer box. Barry was not sure if it was a bug or if it was real, but it was showing up underneath like a result. There'd be a blue answer box, like a small answer box, like it was an AI overview. Then Google is also, Discover is adding shopping price tracking widgets. So check that out if you're doing some shopping. It's going to show you if it's changed the prices. Bing is testing italicized URLs and search results. Nobody knows why. But feel free to jump in, Jim, if you have to. Most of these are pretty self-explanatory.
Keep on going. We're so close to out of time. Just keep on going.
Google Expands posting reviews is turned off for this place. So it means that when like somebody bombards the place with bad reviews because they're angry at it, they're expanding where they're showing it and where they're using it in region wise. Bing is testing a floating Copilot search box. I got that in my Excel today. It's basically just going to.
Yeah, okay.
It's just going to float on the page. I don't like it. Anything that floats, I want things out of my vision. But some people may like it. I don't know. But they're testing it right now. It's not full.
Productivity.
Yes. A new Google search emoji answer feature. Now, I don't have this, and Barry didn't have this, but someone showed if you search for, like, shrugging emoji, which I do often, it shows, like, the emojis, and then you can click on it, and you grab the code for it. That would hurt, though, those companies that have, you know, search pages based on that. Google Business is testing social profiles above Google Posts. It's just another change of testing. I don't know if we have any comment on that. I don't think it matters. Google Video search test speaker icon with language label. If you look at a Google video, it will have, if there's another language available, it will show you a speaker icon with the language like DE for, you know, for German. And then Google is rolling out talk and listen version of Search Live. So we talked about Search Live before. We're able to search things with the camera, but that is not available yet. But you'll be able to do it with talk and listen version of Google Search Live.
Put in the chat in chatbot.
Yes.
Actually, that's going to be interesting. That'll change how people compose queries in the long run. That will have an effect. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Exactly. Yeah. And we'll have to keep an eye on all these things because they change also how people interact with search as far as the query goes.
Okay.
From three words to like 10. So
I want to assure studio that we're on our way out the door right now. Honest to goodness.
Yeah, that was it. That was the last. We made it.
We made it through the show. So that was an interesting week. Again, in memoriam to Jill Whalen. Jill, you are so going to be missed. Thank you. Literally, thank you for everything we have. And to Wills Murphy. Wills, you were so loved.
Just being a light in the world. And we forgot one thing we have to say before we go.
What's that? Oh, big shout outs. Yeah, to Wix Studio and to Audience Key, our sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
Oops.
Oops.
Sorry, guys. I'm sure they'll excuse us for jumping in immediately in with Jill and Wills.
I'm sure.
Okay, friends, you've been listening to Webcology recorded live to podcast on the 26th of June, 2025, the end of second quarter. Be well, report well, rank well, be kind to each other. And on behalf of Creasing Chapters and Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.